Hello everybody, Patrick Vincent here, founder of Burning Media, and in this episode we will be discussing the KKK rallies that are planned across Tennessee on October 28th, and specifically going over the rally that is being held in Shelbyville. Out of concern for the possibility of violence and property damage, Shelbyville announced on Wednesday that it will close streets and separate opposing protesters during an upcoming White Lives Matter rally, one of the few that will be held across Tennessee October 28th. In anticipation of counter-protesters, the city has designated sidewalks on opposite sides of the intersection, separate areas that will be strictly enforced according to a city statement. Given the recent incidents in our country surrounding protests and counter-protests, the city is taking very seriously multiple concerns regarding the safety of expected protesters, counter-protesters, the public, and the protection of public and private property from damage, the statement said. The statement also referenced violent clashes between white nationalists and counter-protesters at the August 12th Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. The White Lives Matter rally is being held by a nationalist front, a group of white nationalist organizations made up of the Traditionalist Worker Party, National Socialist Movement, League of the South, and Vanguard America. I'd also like to go on to point out that all of those groups that we just mentioned, the Southern Poverty Law Center also considers each of those to be an extremist group. No permit is required by the city of Shelbyville to rally on sidewalks, as the group did not request any street closures. Despite the inconvenience these temporary restrictions will create for residents and businesses of Shelbyville, the city plans to move forward with closing surrounding streets in the best interest of public safety, according to its statement on Wednesday. Meanwhile, on Wednesday, Brad Griffin, a League of the South member helping organize the rally, confirmed online that Shelbyville would be the first 3-hour White Lives Matter rally demonstration of the day, followed by a lunch break. After the lunch break, the rally participants will then travel to a second unconfirmed location, according to information posted on Griffin's website, and rally up until around 4 p.m. Besides Shelbyville, Griffin confirmed that Nationalist Front was considering Murfreesboro and other nearby cities as potential additional rally locations. The group plans to hold 2 or 3 public rallies in the middle of Tennessee on October 28th, followed by a private event that evening at a still undisclosed location. Now, I'm not saying that that undisclosed location might have a burning cross in the middle of it with a bunch of people wearing, you know, some tablecloths, but that might just be how they decide to end their night and, you know, celebrate their quote-unquote successful rallies of white pride. And that's all for this segment, everybody. Once again, I'm Patrick Vincent, the founder of Burning Media. If you liked what you heard in this segment, make sure to favorite our station and also check out our Instagram page, Burning Media Network, and join our 37,000 followers. If you go to our website at burningmedia.com, you can also check out all of our podcasts and find the perfect streaming service for you. We are now on iTunes Podcast and also Google Music. This has been your Daily Ember Update. Have a great day. Hello everybody, Patrick Vincent here, founder of Burning Media again, and in this segment of the Daily Ember, we will be discussing how Trump allegedly makes a widow cry. United States Congresswoman Frederica Wilson claimed that President Donald Trump told mourning wife of Sergeant David Johnson that, quote, he knew what he was signing up for, but I guess it hurts anyway. If you could think of a more insensitive thing to say to somebody who just lost their loved one who was serving our country, call in and let me know. And to add more insult to injury, Johnson was a special service trooper that was killed with 3 others in Niger by Islamic militants on October 4th. Now, the families of those killed in Niger on October 4th were not contacted by the President of the United States until October 17th to express his condolences. Now, the president tweeted out early on Wednesday morning that he had proof that Wilson, a Democratic member of the House of Representatives, had totally fabricated what I said to the wife of a soldier who died in action, adding that he had proof. President Donald Trump has still yet to provide any evidence of this fabrication up until this day. Trump has also been under recent fire for saying most other presidents did not contact the families of dead U.S. Armed Forces members after he failed to connect with those killed in Niger for almost 2 weeks. To me, that is something that you can say in a conversation, but you shouldn't say that to a grieving widow, Wilson said. And everyone knows when you go to war, you could possibly not come back alive. But you don't remind a grieving widow of that, Wilson also said in another statement. This gentleman has a brain disorder, and he needs to be checked out, Wilson threw in as her final tweet. That's all for this segment. Once again, I'm Patrick Vincent, founder of Burning Media. Make sure to stick around for this next segment. Hello everybody, Patrick Vincent here, founder of Burning Media, and in this segment we will be discussing how Donald Trump has seen a 31% dip in his net worth since 2015. Since 2015, Donald Trump has dropped 92 spots on the Forbes list of wealthiest Americans. His net worth went down from $4.5 billion in March of 2015 now to $3.1 billion in October of 2017. Now, while Donald Trump was on the campaign trail, he pledged that his net worth was over $10 billion, yet the Forbes figure flagged that at $4.5 billion back in September of 2015. Looking at how much wealth now President Trump has lost over the past 2 years, it is now at about 31%. Forbes has also noted that this could be caused by the rapid decline in the price of his Manhattan properties and the decline in office real estate. And that's all for this segment of the Daily Ember. If you liked what you heard or have any comments, you can always call in and have the opportunity to let your voice be heard on our station. Also, please don't forget to check out the rest of our segments to come in this episode. Hello everybody, Patrick Vincent here, founder of Burning Media, and in this segment we will be discussing how penguins are starving to death in the Antarctic. The disheartening news that all of but two penguin chicks have starved to death out of a colony of almost 40,000 birds is a grim picture of the enormous pressure that Antarctic wildlife is currently under. Now, while the causes of this devastating event are complex, from changing climate to local sea ice factors, but one thing is for sure, penguins, whales, and other marine life do not need any additional strain on their food supplies. Now, it wasn't that long ago that the oceans were thought to be too vast to be impacted by human actions, but the effects of overfishing, oil drilling, deep sea mining, pollution, and climate change have shown that humans are more than up to the task of creating a dangerous environment for the animals that live there. Just a few months ago, governments from around the world agreed to start a process to protect them, an ocean treaty. This ocean treaty won't be agreed on until at least 2020, but in the meantime, momentum is already building towards serious and binding ocean protection. Just last year, a huge 1.5 million square kilometer area was protected in the Ross Sea down in the Antarctic. Now, in such a turbulent political climate, it was a huge demonstration of how international cooperation to protect our shared home can and does work. Now, in the coming 2 weeks, the governments responsible for the Antarctic are meeting to discuss the future of the continent and its waters. While limited proposals are on the table this year, when they do reconvene in 12 months' time, they will have a historic opportunity to create the largest ever protected area on Earth, an Antarctic Ocean Sanctuary. Covering the Weddell Sea next to the Antarctic Peninsula, it would be 5 times the size of Germany, the country proposing it. Ocean sanctuaries provide relief for wildlife and ecosystems to recover, but it's not just about protecting the majestic blue whales and penguin colonies. The benefits of these sanctuaries are global. Recovering fish populations spread around the globe, and only now are scientists beginning to fully understand the role that healthy oceans play in soaking up carbon dioxide and helping us avoid the effects of climate change. Sanctuaries encourage vital biodiversity and provide food security for billions of people that rely on our oceans and are essential to tackling climate change. Our fate and the fate of the ocean are all connected. And that's all for this segment. Once again, I'm Patrick Vinson, the founder of Burning Media, and if you like this, make sure to favorite this station and check out our other episodes. Also, if you had any comments, you can always call in and let your voice be heard. But also, don't forget to check out our Instagram page at Burning Media Network. Join our 37,000 followers on there. And also, check out our website at burningmedianetwork.com for all of our daily original articles. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Hello, everybody. Patrick Vinson here, founder of Burning Media. And in this segment, we will be going over how climate denier Kathleen Hartnett White has been named the White House Environmental Advisor. President Donald Trump has named former Texas environmental regulator and climate change denier Kathleen Hartnett White as his senior advisor on environmental policy. White served as chair on the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality under then-Governor Rick Perry, who's now Donald Trump's Secretary of Energy. Rick Perry, remind you, is also a heavy climate change denier. White has gone on to argue that carbon dioxide is harmless and should not be regulated, and has also gone on to say that solar power and wind power are unreliable. She has also called climate change a dogma that has little to do with science. And to top this all off, back in a 2014 blog post that was titled Energy and Freedom, White wrote that coal dissolved the economic justification for slavery. Now, this is nothing new, being that the whole Trump administration has all been climate deniers so far, from Rick Perry to this new appointee, to Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, who also does not believe in climate change. And that's all for this segment. If you have anything to say, please call in and let your voice be heard. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the current administration in power within the United States. Hello, everybody. Patrick Vinson here, founder of Burning Media. Thank you for listening to episode 4 of The Daily Ember. To wrap this up, I'm going to leave you with a call-in from Samuel Ronan. Now, Samuel Ronan is running for the 1st Congressional District in Ohio. Ronan supports an FDR-style New Deal and the campaign for a federal $15 minimum wage, arguing it should even be higher. Sam has also spoken out against the outsourcing of United States jobs and has advocated for more affordable health care and higher education. Ronan is a strong supporter of renewable energy and combating climate change. He's pro-choice and he supports LGBTQ rights, religious equality, and drug decriminalization. Once again, thank you for listening to episode 4 of The Daily Ember. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to check out our Instagram page at Burning Media Network and also our website for daily original articles at burningmedianetwork.com. Now I leave you with the call-in from Samuel Ronan.
So what am I doing to combat the administration? I'm not letting it get to me. I'm not letting it control me, and I'm not letting it guide my actions. I am taking the path less traveled, and I am building something that we can all depend on. So, I hope that answers your question. I wish I could do more. I really wish I had millions upon millions of dollars to dedicate to both the campaign and the organization, because I do know for a fact I could make a meaningful difference. But unfortunately, I'm just like the rest of you. I am a regular American. I work 40, 50 hours a week just to keep the lights on. I don't have the luxury of dedicating my entire life to politics, even though I'm running for Congress, even though I'm the leader and founder of an organization. It's a team effort, though. I have a team for my congressional campaign. I have a team on Our Voice, and they are amazing people. Without them, none of this would be possible. Without them, I would not have a congressional campaign. I wouldn't have a website. I wouldn't have an easy-to-read and easy-to-understand platform. And Our Voice would never have created a canvassing app that'll support grassroots candidates and grassroots organizations all across the country. Patriots who wish to fight against it and who wish to be a part of that change. Because Trump isn't the disease, he's a symptom of the disease. The disease is a lack of civic engagement of the American people and disenfranchisement and a disbelief that they don't have a voice or a role or a place in politics. Politics isn't sexy anymore, if it ever was. Politics is not fun, it isn't entertaining, it isn't something to get excited about. It's what old, rich, white men get involved in, and it's what causes a lot of suffering and angst and anguish between friends and family. We have to get the anger and the outrage and the frustration out of politics, and we have to start bringing the positive emotion, how we can work together, how we can live with one another, how we can build one another up. And that's what I've been doing in both my campaign and in my efforts with Our Voice. The widow of a fallen Green Beret. I just, as much as I want to ignore him and take away his platform to speak and to be heard, it almost has to be addressed because he is one of the single most powerful people on the planet right now due to his position. And what bothers me the most is that he continues to sway people who are angry, who are disenfranchised, but would rather blame someone than do something to fix it, to elect officials to change the processes, the realities, the laws in place that put them in positions of weakness instead of positions of power. So it's not enough to say that I view the Trump administration as a failure or as a farce or everything against what America stands for. It's more so I'm working to build a culture and an organization and a network of Americans. It will save millions of dollars for Americans who are wealthy enough to benefit from the estate tax or who would benefit from its repeal. So what I do instead is I highlight that fact and I show that no one making less than $5 million would actually be able to benefit from this, and to instead compare it to broadening the 15% tax rate up to persons making $90,000 or less. Because by easing the tax burden on the middle class, that is what actually invigorates the economy and allows our economy to grow and allows the middle class to breathe comfortably in their economic surety. Other things, whenever he quotes or says something or does something foolhardy, when he says something, well, racist or just unempathetic to